Good morning. I'm Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. It's past the hour, and it's Friday morning, folks. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. Dan Pashman is here with us in studio. Good morning, Mr. Pashman.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Happy Women's Equality Day.
Thank you. Happy Women's Equality Day to you, too.
Happy Women's Equality Day to you, Chris Lopresto.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy Women's Equality Day.
Okay. Well, because, you know, the people said there's too much testosterone up in here. And since we are going to have a sports guy coming on to talk with us a little later on this morning, I think we ought to give proper respect to the other half of the gender divide here.
Sure thing.
Now, Bush actually made this announcement yesterday. But Women's Equality Day on August 26th actually started back in 1971. It was started at the behest of the late Congresswoman Bella Abzug from right here in New York.
Sure.
In 1976, Jimmy Carter actually signed a resolution proclaiming August 26th Women's Equality Day.
Okay.
Bush, I guess, you know, was busy doing other things and busy smearing Cindy Sheehan, a woman.
Right.
So I guess he really didn't get around to declaring it until yesterday. But hey, you know, I guess we really shouldn't quibble about this, right?
Right.
We should be happy that our president has seen fit to recognize better than half the voters in America.
Well, you know, he has been on vacation, Riley, so he might not have gotten that memo, although now I guess they say he's not on vacation. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, vacation, not vacation.
Right.
Assassination, no assassination. God, these people doublespeak so much, it's really kind of making me woof. Now, you know, we got a little in-house thing, cause since we are going to be talking about sports later on, we got a little in-house thing going on in here. We might as well kind of like a pustule lance it now.
Right, right.
And let it dry out. Pedro Martinez,
yeah,
the great one himself, won his 13th game last night for the New York Mets. That's a baseball team, for those of you who don't follow sports.
Right.
And Mark Maron, because, you know, you never know whether he actually follows these sorts of things. But this is a source of great controversy here on the Morning Sedition crew, because there was a little wager. Not a financial wager, folks.
Right.
So don't send the IRS over here, right?
No, we're not big drinkers, really, on the Morning Sedition. Or, I'm sorry.
We're not.
No, I take that. We're not big gamblers. We're not big gamblers. We do enjoy a good drink, though, and that's why the bet that Chris and I made is over 2 pitchers of beer. It's not over any dollar amount.
2 pitchers of beer.
To be enjoyed at Desmond's Tavern on Park Avenue, where we sometimes go after work.
Is this good beer? I mean, are y'all going to just get, like, bar squeeze or what?
Well, if I win, I'm going to get the best there is. If he wins, I don't know. But if he wins, he's going to get like tap water.
Oh, my God. All right, now, if Chris wins, Pedro has to win 15 games or more.
The original bet was 15. It was an over-under. Over-under is when you pick a certain number.
Okay.
If it's over, one guy wins. If it's under, the other guy wins. If it hits the number on the dot, it's called basically a draw. And I predicted that Pedro would win fewer than 15 games this year.
That was not the language.
Chris predicted that he would win more than 15 games, and it was supposed to be a tie if it was 15. And then about a month ago, there was some confusion over the original intent of the bet. Brendan, B-Mac McDonald is here. He's going to act as an arbitrator here.
Right. My father does this for a living, so hopefully I'll be able to. It's in the
DNA.
What,
arbitrates disputes among morning show staff?
It's not exactly morning show staff. It's more like firefighters and the city.
Okay.
Must be why you're so reasonable.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably it was passed down. But now the dispute was, as Kalo said, was in the language over what over under meant.
Right.
So I think we can agree now, though, that 15 is the over under.
Right. That's what it was always said.
No, when the bet was made, you said, Dan,
God, this sounds like something illegal. You know that, right? Are we supposed to be talking about gambling on the airwaves? The over-under? We sound like Jimmy the Greek here, for God's sake.
Well, Johnny K-Street will be by later in the show.
Oh, that's right. He'll give us the real deal over-under on this.
Right.
So now, which is it? Is it 15? Is it more than 15? Is it less than 15? Let's settle this thing.
Brendan is the
Well,
is
what's
the
your dispute, Kalo?
My dispute is, when he made the bet, he said Pedro Martinez will not win 15 games.
Right. Right. But then, and then...
So if he wins 15 games.
Then it's a tie.
No, it means that I won.
I said 15 over
but
under.
But wait, was the language agreed on of over under?
Never. Yes. Over under. Like, I. We, you
was
never
it just
said that
you don't know what that means?
Yes.
All right, Lord, this has to be continued at some other time.
Yes, right.
I'm going to have to go back and figure out a proper legal way to draw this up.
But I would like to say for the record that just to protect my own honor, a month ago when Kalo challenged...
Your what?
My honor.
What?
When Kalo challenged this, I went ahead and told him that he could have the victory at 15 wins, even though I know that that's not the original bet we made. I went ahead and gave that to him because I did not want anyone to think that I would welch on a bet. So.
Wow. Well, that's good. And he won his 13th last night.
Last night. So he's creeping up. If he wins 16, then there's no dispute. Of course, Kalo wins.
But if he wins 15, then, you know what? Whatever. We'll just buy each other.
You buy each other, and you'll both drink each other under a table, and you'll both go home and throw up in the toilet, and you'll be okay the next morning.
No, we won't.
As I said to Chris when we made the bet, the beauty of it is, in reality, we both win.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, later this morning, we are going to be talking with New York Times sports columnist Bill Roden. He's going to be talking with us about Lance Armstrong, which is an amazing story in and of itself, racial tension in baseball, and the wild card races as well. We're also going to be talking to Paul Rykoff, director and founder of Operation Truth. He's going to talk about a story we're going to deal with right now, briefly, and that's the closing of the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. They're moving it out to the burbs. And for a lot of people, I think, inside the District of Columbia, this sounds suspiciously like white flight to people. You know what I'm saying? They're moving it from the District of Columbia, predominantly black area, to a suburban Virginia area that is obviously not predominantly black. Most D.C. politicians, including Mayor Williams and D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, had lobbied furiously to try and keep Walter Reed open. In the end, it wasn't even close.
Right.
It was, I think, what, 8-0 with one abstention? On that that commission, the BRA, what is it, BRAC, I think it's
right,
called.
Right, BRAC, exactly.
Yeah, well, it looks like Walter Reed is going to be history. And Paul Rykoff has a very interesting take on Walter Reed and what it's like from the perspective of a wounded soldier to have been at Walter Reed.
Right, Paul Rykoff is the director and founder of Operation Truth, and he is going to be here in the studio with us later in the show. And, you know, we first heard about this story. Our knee-jerk reaction with our automatic skepticism of the Bush administration was, oh, my God, this is horrible. They're closing down this hospital. But it turns out that there may be some logic to it, you know, and we're reasonable people here. You know, people on the right-wing talk shows, Mark Riley, they'll just condemn anything that the left says or does no matter what. They don't really think for themselves.
No, that's true.
But we here on the left, we form our own independent opinions. We actually consider all sides of an issue. So we're going to go ahead and bring in an expert, Paul Rykoff, who served in Iraq, who knows many people who have been and are at Walter Reed right now, and he has been to Walter Reed many times. He can tell us about it in detail. He's in contact with many soldiers, many Iraq war veterans. So he's going to come in here and give us a straight answer, and I think you may be interested to hear what he has to say. But I think that we can learn that the fact that we're approaching this issue with an open mind, Riley, shows that when we stand the Bush administration, whatever we say must be objectively true.
That's right. We got legit reasons for slamming these idiots.
Yeah.
Now, this commission did decide to close some Air Force facilities in Alaska and California. But they're going to be voting today on some really contentious recommendations, including reconfiguring the Air National Guard. And a number of states are fiercely opposed to that. They're talking about closing the Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota and the Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico and the entire South Dakota congressional delegation, which is only about four people, I guess.
Right.
Actually attended the hearing yesterday, and Governor Bill Richardson, Democrat of New Mexico, also. So stakes are high for politicians because this translates into jobs.
Exactly.
That's the problem with Walter Reed. That's the problem with Ellsworth. That's the problem with the closing of all these bases. This is not just closing bases. Because if you're in the military, you just go someplace else. You're billeted to another location.
Right.
It's different when you're a civilian. It's different if you're working in a convenience store that depended on military personnel to come in and buy stuff.
Right.
Then you get laid off. You have to find another job. And I think that's what people find particularly contentious about these base closings, even though many on the left have argued in favor of base closings for a long time. Nobody, certainly I don't like to see people lose their jobs. I don't like to see people put out of work.
Of course.
Especially hard work. You know what it's like to be in a convenience store for 8 hours in a day? It is really a deep deep experience. And it is. I'm telling you, man.
I believe it. Is that something you got personal experience with, Riley?
I've never worked in a convenience store, but I've been in convenience store situations at odd hours in the morning when, you know, the guy that's working behind the counter thinks that everybody that walks in is getting ready to rob him at gunpoint.
Right.
Okay. And we've all seen those videotapes, the guys coming in and reaching over. Anyway, well, long story short, because I don't want to get off on a tangent here.
Right.
The bottom line is these are the kind of jobs that end up getting lost. Right, it's not just the jobs that are directly connected to a military base. It's the jobs around a military base. That's what you're going to see at Fort Monmouth. That's what you're going to see at Walter Reed. And that's what politicians, whose stock in trade is, you know, supposedly promising people that everybody's going to work, that's where they are vulnerable. And that's why they react so badly to this. But this is a done thing now.
Yeah.
Walter Reed is, in fact, going to close. And the district is going to be in a lot different shape.
It's true.
As a direct result.
That Ellsworth one's going to be really interesting to watch because John Thune, the Republican who unseated Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle, a big part of his platform was, look, I'm a Republican. Republicans are running the government now. I'm with those
guys.
These
are my friends.
Right. I'll save the base if you vote for me. And then a few months after he got voted in, they said, we're cutting the base.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about George W. Bush's working vacation.
Oh, yeah.
It was a vacation when he started.
Right.
His people are now saying, oh, no, this isn't a vacation. He's actually working. Stay with us at 17 past the hour. Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. We want to say a special good morning to our listeners in South Florida. We know you're catching hell with Katrina down there. 4 people have died, 1,000,003 people without power as this hurricane, which was upgraded to a hurricane, with horizontal sheets of rain, seas estimated at 15 feet, and wind gusts of up to 92 miles an hour. Hit South Florida late last evening. It even blew the MTV parties out of the water, Dan Pashman.
Oh, no, not the MTV parties, Mark.
Yeah. They said, that, you know, they tried to brave it out at first. Oh, yeah, well, no, we're going to have them anyway.
Oh, they would have had a river of bling down the Miami Main Boulevard. They would have had, Puffy would have been floating down there with
on a tree.
Yeah, right.
If something would have happened, that's for sure.
You know, as Brendan said, that's the only good thing that came out of this hurricane is all the MTV parties got washed away.
Yeah, absolutely. So, here's hoping, though. Those of you who may be listening to us on transistor radios on WINZ down in Miami, hopefully you'll get your power back very, very soon.
Yes.
Now, we've got some other things that are going on in the world. Iraq Constitution, apparently an oxymoron. Deadline number 3 has come and gone. From a technical standpoint, Dan Pashman, I guess they would be in what? If this was a court proceeding, they'd be in technical contempt of court.
Yeah.
Because from the way their interim constitution is written, if they didn't get this one done by the deadline, whichever deadline you want to choose, they are supposed to dissolve the 275-member National Assembly and start all over again.
Right.
That's not what they're doing. They're just sort of saying, well, okay, we sort of kind of didn't make the deadline, so now we're going to move on. I think they're meeting again today.
Supposedly that they're meeting. The whole thing is so murky that they've already kind of quasi-bypassed the rule that they sort of said, well, the committee okayed the Constitution, so even if we don't get the Sunnis on board, we're going to go ahead and bring it to the people. So my guess is my educated guess is what's going to happen here. They're not going to get the Sunni approval. The Sunnis want too much. They have too much to lose here. They're going to have to take this thing to the people, and they're going to have to take their chances on the October 15th referendum. That if the Sunnis, it only needs a 50% vote for to pass throughout the whole population, but if any 3 provinces vote 2/3 against the Constitution, then it is knocked out, and there are 4 majority Sunni provinces. If 3 out of those 4 provinces get 2/3 against the Constitution, which is no guaranteed factor.
It's not guaranteed, but you know what? This is a political consultant's dream. At least the numbers are, all right? This is where the Sunnis can say, checkmate. We don't have to participate in the original election last January, which many of them did not. We don't have to participate in the constitutional talks. You Kurds and you Shiites, you can shun us if you want. But we got the ace in the hole.
Right.
We got the referendum because the way this is written, and again, maybe they'll ignore this too, but if that happens, if the Constitution is voted down by referendum, there goes the National Assembly anyway.
That's the amazing thing, Mark. Remember those, everyone recalls those elections back in January or February. We had the big elections, I think it was January 30th. This year that everyone was looking forward to. It was a huge event in Iraq. It was hailed as the next step in democracy. If this constitution does not get passed on October 15th by the Iraqi people, all of those elections back in January are for naught. All the people who were elected then get booted out. The entire government is dissolved, and they need to re-elect a new government in December, which is essentially a year later, and start drafting a new constitution from scratch.
Yeah, and what's that going to do for the average Iraqi who's simply looking for perhaps a job, perhaps some steady electricity, and a little peace and security in their lives? 100 people have died around Iraq over the last 48 hours, ladies and gentlemen. Jeez. 100 people as this violence ramps up. Now, the good news is that the inter-Shia violence apparently has subsided. Al-Sadr's people have apparently backed up a little bit. But the flip side of that is that apparently insurgents loyal to Saddam Hussein are walking through the streets of some Iraqi cities with masks on, shooting up anything that moves.
Right.
And all of this, ladies and gentlemen, because I know Americans are, you know, we are not taught to pay attention to the death toll of other people, all right, not even Iraqis. But this kind of violence, this cycle of death means that, and we said this earlier this week, your kids, your grandkids, your nieces and nephews, your next door neighbors are going to end up staying in Iraq longer than they should, longer than they have to. You know, it was last night, Dan, I went to get some food, and up at the corner where I live, there's an armory. You know, one of the Teaneck Armory, where a lot of people are deployed to Iraq. You know what I saw, much to my amazement, a crowd of about 15, 20 people with Bring the Troops Home Now placards.
Wow.
Standing in front of the Teaneck Armory.
You haven't seen that in the past?
No, I haven't.
Wow.
The last gathering I saw in front of the Teaneck Armory, and it was a gathering I went to, was to see the troops off. When one of the big deployments was on its way to Fort Dix. This is a while ago now. But yeah, usually you have those kind of protests at the town square or whatever, and you'll get a couple of people. This was a good number of people, 15, 20 folks, and they were all standing there with, you know, U.S. out of Iraq, bring the troops home now. It was an integrated gathering. And it's very interesting to see that more and more Americans are getting behind the right of all of us to protest this war. We're going to get into that coming up, and we're also going to have the dog of the week. And believe me, folks, you got no problems who this week dog is going to be.
That's a good one.
Stay with us. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's 27 past the hour with Danger Mouse.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater. This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents Karaoke with Mark Riley's stirring rendition of MacArthur Park.
Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh, no.
And Wayne Gilman singing James Brown.
Get up off of that thing and try to release that pressure. Wait a minute, so funky. I need it. Sunshine good. Good God.
This has been Karaoke with Mark Riley and Wayne Gilman on Morning's Edition Radio Theater.
That's the end of my karaoke career. I'm going to tell you that right now. 35 minutes past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. My name is Mark Riley. The crew is here. Dan Pashman, Chris Lopresto, B-Mac, Brendan McDonald. It's a Friday. And
yes.
I'm not going to steal Randy's, you bastards, because, I mean, that would be a little over the top. But we do have a
little
segment.
Bounce your boobies.
Sorry, I don't have any. Do you have any?
I have a little bit of booze.
You have a little bit? You know, I saw that there's a show on TV called Little Britain where these guys dress up in women's clothes a lot of times. And this guy with the, like this huge pot belly who dresses up with a bra and panties.
Right.
And, I mean, he's scary. Anyway, it's that time again. It is time for the Dog of the Week. Hey, you do that as good as Marin, you know that?
thank you.
There's really no need to think hard about who this week's dog is. It was no contest. Pat Robertson calls himself a Christian, but his latest diatribe and retraction is part of a long tradition of demonic acts. This alleged man of the cloth is a stain on the American clergy. He decides an elected leader of a nation in our own hemisphere is a dictator and should be assassinated. The U.S. may have disagreements with Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, but murdering him isn't the smartest way to resolve them. I seem to remember a biblical phrase from Psalm 91. It mentions protection from the noisome pestilence. If there's a human face to such pestilence, it's Pat Robertson. Even his friends abandoned him on the Hugo Chavez assassination train. That led to Robertson's amazing series of U-turns earlier this week.
I didn't say assassination.
You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it.
I didn't say assassination.
If he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it.
I didn't say assassination.
Assassinate him.
I didn't say assassination.
We really ought to go ahead and do it.
Spoken like a true minister of the gospel, Reverend. And if that weren't enough, some are starting to ask questions about that diet shake Pat Robertson has on the market. You know, the one he's making a profit from by shilling on his non-profit Christian broadcasting network. By any normal measure, Pat Robertson fails the test of what a clergyman should be. He passes one test, however. Pat Robertson, you are the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week. What a low life. I hope, you know, in a way, I hope when we come back from vacation that there's nothing more to say about him. But then part of me really does want there to be something else to say about him.
Yeah, well, I think even if there's nothing else for us to say about him immediately when you get back, he'll probably put his foot in his mouth another time in the relatively near future and give us another chance to slam him.
Yeah, that's right. And you notice Pashman said, when I get back.
Right.
That's because Pashman will be here. Chris LaPresta will be here. B-Mac Brendan McDonald will be here. Dave, the gigantic, paid intern? He'll be here. They'll all be here next week. Our next live broadcast will be our biggest ever. We'll be at the New School on Friday, September 9th. We'll have former Senator Bob Kerrey and The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. That's Friday, September 9th. That's not this Friday. It is at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues in New York City from 6 to 9 a.m.
That's going
to
be a real big one. Great show that day.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Now, you know, it's interesting. This is a kind of troubling story for me in a certain way. Because, you know, the American Legion and VFW are probably the two biggest veterans organizations. The American Legion claims about 2.7 million members. And they're having their annual convention in Honolulu. You know, back in the day when I was young, when I used to march in drum corps that were sponsored by the American Legion, they'd have it, you know, in exotic places like Dallas. And, you know, they'd have their annual conventions in, you know, pretty pedestrian locales, Philadelphia. Not anymore, however. Now they're out in Honolulu. And the American Legion has thrown down the gauntlet in terms of people protesting the war in Iraq. They just simply want it to stop. I don't understand. I mean, you know, this is supposedly what all these soldiers fought and died for, was the right to speak freely. But they are now saying, the head of the American Legion, that, you know, we're tired of hearing all this stuff, and we want both the media and the protesters to stop. It's a scary thing.
It is, Mark. I mean, the group's national commander called for an end to all, quote-unquote, public protests and media events against the war. Listen to this quote, Mark. This is what really bothers me. He says, "The American Legion will stand against anyone and any group that would demoralize our troops or, worse, endanger their lives by encouraging terrorists to continue their cowardly acts against freedom-loving peoples." Now, if you ask me, the American who has done the most to endanger their lives by encouraging terrorists to continue their cowardly attacks against freedom-loving peoples is George W. Bush.
Well, yeah. It pains me to criticize the American Legion on one level. And this is going to sound completely crazy because their politics and my politics are diametrically opposed.
Right.
But I grew up in American Legion Post as a kid. I was nurtured by guys who had fought during the Second World War and during the Korean War. Their politics weren't the same as mine, but that didn't stop them. As in many cases, their skin color wasn't even the same as mine. But that didn't stop them from helping and nurturing and mentoring me. And I was a member of a drum corps that was sponsored by the Gabarina Mazarakis Post number 1523 of New York City.
All right.
But I get off the bus when it comes to this sort of thing.
Right.
You know, and I know a lot of these guys that are friends of mine agree with this. There are places, and there is actually a Garfield American Legion Post in Garfield, New Jersey, where they still have Hanoi Jane posters inside the urinals.
Jeez.
You know, and this is because that act by Jane Fonda cut at them very deeply. Now, I didn't disagree with her going at the time. I didn't even disagree with her sentiments. But I also seriously miscalculated the depth to which that cut the veterans at that time. And I think what the Legion is doing and what the Legion is saying here is in direct response to that that time when they were coming home from Vietnam and they were being called baby killers.
You're right, Mark. And what I find so maddening about this general, the whole idea that somehow it is wrong to protest American policy, you know, and this is something that's been hashed and rehashed. But what I find most maddening is that, look, if you really honestly, truly just believe that we should support the president all the time, that we should support the troops whenever they're sent into combat, if that was truly what you believed, then I suppose you must have been in full support of President Clinton's decision to send troops to Kosovo.
Well,
I suppose you must have been in full support of President Clinton's decision to bomb al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan.
Well,
but as we know, many of these same conservatives slammed President Clinton during those very same times when those same decisions were making, which exposes them not only as hypocrites, but more than that, it exposes them as nothing more than pathetic partisan hacks. That's all these people are. They're just Republicans. They're not patriots.
Well, I tell you, they certainly are running counter to the opinions of mainstream America. At the same time, the head of the American Legion says people, if they're going to protest, they should do so in their shower, I guess, like they should sing or something.
Right.
An overwhelming number of people surveyed in this AP Ipsos poll, 90%.
Yes.
Say that critics of the Iraq war should be free to voice their objections in a public forum. And this is, by the way, a rare example of widespread agreement about this war. People may be on both sides about whether or not we should stay, whether we should have gone in the first place, but 90% of the American people, according to this poll, 9 out of every 10 people say that the folks who are protesting have every right to do so and should continue to do so. And, of course, later on this morning, we're going to be talking with Cindy Sheehan, who engendered this spirit of protest with her singular act.
You're right, Mark. I'm really looking forward to it. We have not talked to her since she got back to Crawford, and we're going to have her on the phone live from Crawford a little later in the show.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, even some people that they talk to here continue to try and slam Cindy Sheehan. I'm not quite sure exactly why, but they are continuing to say, oh, her son would be ashamed. I don't know how people who never knew Casey Sheehan can say how he would have felt about his mother's protest. That's an amazing leap of faith to me. They would not want anyone outside their own families making that kind of conclusion about them or any of their family members.
Exactly. I mean, what if the fallen soldiers of some of those pro-Bush supporters who are now on the other side of the street from Cindy Sheehan in Crawford, what if we came on the air and told those people that their fallen children disapproved of what they were doing? It would be just as wrong
for
us to do that. And the level to which these people will sink to smear a mother who lost her son in Iraq and pretend to know what that dead son thought of this war, to know better than his mother, is really disgraceful.
It is. It is truly disgraceful. And people who say this, to quote one of our mayoral candidates here in New York, ought to hang their heads in shame.
Yes.
Speaking of hanging your head in shame, and we'll do this real quick, you know, I'm going on vacation next week, Dan Pashman. I know what a vacation is, all right? I sleep in, I scratch myself, I go downstairs, have some coffee, I go back to sleep. That's a vacation.
Right.
Okay? George W. Bush apparently doesn't want the American people to think that he's on vacation.
Yeah, this is great, right? Tell the people about this one.
All right. Well, they're getting a little defensive. A spokesman for the president says, quote, he's operating on a full schedule. He's just doing it from the ranch instead of from the White House. The only week he had officially off was this last week. Now, what they're doing is saying they're doing some renovations on the West Wing. And instead of saying, as they said at the time he left, you know, the president's going on vacation, now they're saying, well, he had to leave because they were working on his house.
Right. I mean, what's so insane about this, Riley, is his vacation, and it is a vacation.
Yes.
His vacation's almost over. And now, at the end of his vacation, they're like, it wasn't a vacation. It was just renovation in the West Wing. Now, we looked. When he left to go to Crawford,
uh-huh.
They didn't say, well, they're renovating the White House, so we're going to send him to Crawford. I mean, this guy, you got to understand, this guy has gone to Crawford for the month of August every year.
Yeah.
Every year he goes. Okay, and he's gone at the exact same time, to the exact same place this year. And then at the beginning of the vacation, they said, well, he's going on his normal August vacation. Now at the end of the vacation, they say, whoa, we're going to go ahead and revise.
This isn't a vacation.
Yeah, we're going to revise history. And actually go back in time and tell you, no, he's not on vacation. It's not even a working vacation, which is the BS phrase they try to use. He's actually just working out of Crawford because they're renovating in the White House.
And incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a Kill Whitey party. Okay? And I didn't organize it. Okay? Neither did Wayne Gilman. Stay with us. It's 46 minutes past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air. And online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Riley from Morning Sedition with another of my 25 reasons why I hate white people. Wait a minute. When did you take that? That wasn't me.
Microphones everywhere.
Oh, Lord. Well, look, I did not, contrary to what you just heard, ladies and gentlemen, and it's 51 minutes past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. The Morning Sedition crew is here. Dan Pashman.
Hey.
Who I may call D-Pash from now on.
That's
who knows?
Cool. I'm down with that.
And, of course, Chris Lopresto and B-Mac, Brendan McDonald. And, no, I don't want to kill white people. Actually, I like white people.
All right.
But there's a white guy in Brooklyn. There's a white guy in Brooklyn whose name is The Pumpster. That's not P-U-M-P-S-T-E-R. It's P-U-M-P-S-T-A.
Right.
Pumpster, so you know.
Naturally.
Like gangsta.
Right.
he has actually been giving kill whitey parties in Williamsburg. Now, Williamsburg, for those of you who don't know anything about New York, Williamsburg was an area of Brooklyn that was savaged during the 1977 blackout. They had riots. They had people out in the street, Williamsburg and Bushwick. It was generally a depressed area of Brooklyn. And what happened was people that got priced out of Manhattan when the rents started going sky high moved out to Brooklyn because the rents were cheap.
Right.
And next thing you know, they had this whole hipster enclave in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And it is out of that hipster enclave that these kill whitey parties emerge.
Right.
All right. Now, there are very few, just so none of you get like real nervous about this and start emailing sedition. There are very few black people at these kill whitey parties. Okay? This is not about black folks talking about kill whitey.
Right.
If it were, they'd have a terrorism task force investigating it.
Sure.
These are white kids who are coming to these kill whitey parties. And what they're talking about is killing the whiteness inside them. At least that's what they say in this article in the Washington Post. Now, this is not necessarily, well, the kill whitey part is new, okay? Let's be real right. about that. But the idea of white kids emulating black culture is as old as white kids and black culture.
Yeah, seriously. White people have been ripping off black culture for at least a century.
Oh, yeah. Generations from Paul Whiteman to Elvis Presley to, what is that guy's name? Who did Ice Ice?
Vanilla
Ice. Yeah, that's the moron. So, you know, you got all of these guys. And some women as well, who have kind of pimped their way off of black culture. And, of course, these are not free kill whitey parties. These parties actually do cost some money. But the thing that was most instructive to me about it was the comment of one person, who one young partygoer Who said, well, you know, I went to some of the parties with black folks, but the guys were too hardcore.
So I
had to come out here and dance with the white kids where it's safe.
Right, I prefer to hang out with the fake black kids.
Yeah, yeah. Now, some people are actually upset about this. Some people are saying...
Really?
Yeah, they're saying...
I don't understand why.
Well...
Kill whitey parties? Who can find any offense in that?
Well, they say that it's disturbing because, you know, these people have the attitude that it's their privilege to do these kill whitey parties because they have their own little clique. They're in their own little world. Now, I would say, you know, as an African American, the only thing that troubles me about it is I can't give one. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. But the fact of the matter is, if black people were given kill whitey parties, it would have an entirely different aura of menace
yes.
to it. Even if everything else was the same as these.
Right.
You know, it's just you know, people go to some very long lengths to be entertained in this society.
Yeah, I try to stay out of Williamsburg, though. I mean, I live in Brooklyn. For those of you out there who don't know, Brooklyn, on its own, would be the fourth largest city in America if we're not part of New York City. So it is a massive area, and I live a ways away from Williamsburg, but in Brooklyn, as do Kalo and BMAC. We all live in Brooklyn, and I love Brooklyn, but I stay away from Williamsburg. I don't like all those hipsters. You know, it's all like... It's a real mishmash over there, but the hipsters just really piss me off.
The hipsters, they don't make you happy, huh?
No, there are some hipsters in my neighborhood, to be fair, but... It's a manageable level. There's also like some families and like there's sort of like an old Italian kern, like a lot of like old men in undershirts sitting out in the street smoking cigars and yelling at each other in Italian.
Yeah, well, they don't do kill whitey parties. I guess. That's for sure.
Yes.
Now we talked yesterday about the fact that Dwight Gooden, the star pitcher, former star pitcher of the New York Mets and Yankees, was AWOL after having been stopped and speeding away from a police officer in Tampa, Florida. Well, he turned himself in after entreaties from his family, including Yankees outfielder Gary Sheffield and his mom, Ella May. And he turned himself in to Tampa police yesterday after 4 days on the run.
Jeez.
Now he's being held in jail without bond after he's after being charged with fleeing and attempting to elude a police officer. That's a felony and two misdemeanors.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the Dwight Gooden situation has really just gotten sad. I mean, this guy was busted for drugs back in the mid-'80s, and he's been in and out of jail and in and out of the justice system pretty much ever since. And it was kind of a punchline for a while. Now it's just kind of sad. And I think that, you know, frankly, I hope that for him this is rock bottom, you know, and hopefully he can start to turn things around for himself before he does anything worse to himself.
Well, yeah, and he's got to get into some kind of a treatment program.
Yeah, because and I know he's been.
This is some serious alcohol. And the last few times he's gotten in trouble with the law, it appears as though alcohol has played some role. It was a domestic violence beef, I believe, not too long ago as well. And hopefully he will get the help he needs, as all people who are in this, because you don't want to just say, well, you know, I hope he gets special help because he had a great curveball.
Right.
Let's hope everyone who's in this situation gets themselves a little bit of help. Now, we also have a story here this morning about male body waxing. However, I'm going to save that story till News Daddy gets in here because he's the only person I know who might even consider such an act.
Wayne is a little bit shiny on like the first Tuesday of every month. Have you ever noticed that?
I don't know, man. But this is that peeling away the hair on your chest and stuff.
Oh, I know what waxing is. I saw that movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. There's a whole big scene where this guy gets his chest waxed, and it's
really
You know how you can feel pain when you see someone else's pain. You have there's an ability in your brain to sense that. It's kind of like when you see a guy on TV get hit in the groin area. Exactly. It was the same kind of thing.
That's smart. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Iraq Constitution because it doesn't exist at this point.
Yeah.
We're also going to talk to the New York Times' Bill Roden about Lance Armstrong, the wild card race, and so much more. It's 57 minutes past the hour. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Six minutes past the hour. Happy Women's Equality Day.
Yeah!
That's right. This is Morning's Edition. My name is Mark Reilly. Mark Maron is on vacation, but the Morning's Edition crew is here with me. Chris Lopresto, D-Pash, Dan Pashman, and B-Mac Brendan McDonald, all in the hizzy.
Yes.
As they like to say among young. You know, I got gray hair, so I'm not really supposed to use words like that.
That's
you know?
Right. Happy Women's Equality Day to you, too.
That's right. This is the commemoration today, August 26th, is commemorating the day that women won the right to vote. My only question is, why did it take them from, like, 1789 to 1920 to figure out women should have the right to vote?
It really is kind of scary that it's only 1920. I mean, you know, my grandmother was alive then. Like, when my grandmother was born, women... I mean, my grandmother's still alive, I should say. When my grandmother was born, she didn't have the right to vote.
It's unbelievable. We want to give a special good morning to our friends in South Florida, people who are listening either on XM or streaming on the internet, or listening to us on small transistor radios on WINZ in the Miami area, because we know you got hit hard by Hurricane Katrina, 92-mile-an-hour winds. Four people have died. Three of them, apparently, not heeding warnings to stay indoors, went out and got injured either in cars or in other situations trying to move around. A number of injuries, 1.3 million people at last count, which is a few hours ago now, were without power. Here's hoping you get your power back soon and that you have a good weekend. I don't know if I could live in a place where there's constant hurricanes. You know, it's bad enough living here where it's hot all the time. But, like, hurricanes on top of that?
Yeah, I lived through Hurricane Bob. I don't think anyone would die, but it was quite a harrowing experience. I was out in Martha's Vineyard for the summer back in the 90s, and Hurricane Bob, we had no power for 48 straight hours, and that was unpleasant. So that was one time in my life. That was enough.
Well, I'll tell you what, blackouts and hurricanes, first of all, the two sure situations where you're going to lose power.
Right.
And, you know, people kind of take electricity for granted in this society. When your refrigerator starts, starts melting, you know, stuff in your refrigerator you can no longer use, you got to start throwing stuff away. It becomes a whole different thing. You start looking at electricity and power very differently. At least I do.
Yeah, you know, I remember my mom telling me when she was a teenager up in Marblehead, Massachusetts. She used to work in an ice cream store. When the power went out, they would start giving away free ice cream because the ice cream was going to melt anyway.
Yeah.
But when it was Hurricane Bob in Martha's Vineyard, I went to Mad Martha's to try to get free ice cream. My mother had been regaling me with this story.
Yes, always trying to take advantage.
Yeah, and you know this is one of those things where you know that maybe there's a little too much litigation out there because they wouldn't give me free ice cream because they said that I could sue if the ice cream was melted and if it had gone bad and I got sick, I could sue them.
Well, you could.
I know, but you know, 30 years ago, people didn't have to think about stuff like that. You just got the free ice cream. Damn it.
What does your dad do for a living?
He's a lawyer.
What? You say what?
What?
That's right. So you might have a little free legal advice in that regard?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
here's hoping that everybody in Florida gets their power back very, very shortly.
Yes.
You know, Iraq doesn't have a whole lot of power 24 hours a day, and apparently their National Assembly didn't have the power to get this constitution done.
That's right.
What's up with this?
It's going from bad to worse, Riley. I mean, it's really not going anywhere, in fact.
Yeah, that's the problem. Going anywhere.
Yeah, I think they're going to just bring it to the people. The Sunnis, they're not going to have the Sunnis on board. And it's basically going to come down to a situation where we see if the Sunnis are able to galvanize two-thirds of the people in the four provinces where they have a majority, three out of those four provinces, in order to vote against the Constitution. And if they vote that thing down, it's back to square one.
It is back to square one. What really pisses me off about this is that you could describe this past week, as far as the formation of this Constitution, it's been a train wreck.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute train wreck. By the way, engineered, Casey Jones in this case, is our President George W. Bush.
Right.
All right. He's been behind the scenes trying to pressure these people to get it done. They haven't gotten it done. And what's the best he can say? He's still optimistic that they'll someday get it done.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. I think a lot of Americans probably are not paying such close attention to this Constitution battle. They might not think it's that important. They might not understand why it's relevant. But all you need to understand is that if this thing gets voted down on October 15th, remember those elections we had back in January? They mean nothing. Everyone who was elected then gets tossed out. We got to go all the way back, re-elect an entire assembly, and then start drafting a new constitution from scratch, and that's going to add at least another year onto the U.S. presence in Iraq.
And that means U.S. troop presence in Iraq,
right,
ladies and gentlemen. And again, we're looking at a situation here where the Sunnis, who had been in power, the minority who had been in power for so long, feel disenfranchised. They did not participate in the January elections, and they are worried to death that the Kurds in the north and the Shia in the south will divide up Iraq's very lucrative spoils in the form of oil and leave them effectively disenfranchised. George W. Bush should have seen this coming. His neocon death cult, as Maron likes to call him, that formulated this entire war should have known that this was one of the possible consequences. And yet we sit here and listen to George W. Bush and his administration say, well, we're still optimistic that an agreement can be reached. That's what you've been saying since they missed the first deadline, you morons. Come on.
These guys are just so divorced from reality, Riley. They are unwilling to face it, and they are unwilling to acknowledge it. But the reality keeps coming back to bite them.
Yeah, it certainly does. We are going to take a break. Coming up next, our good friend Bill Roden, sports columnist for the New York Times. We'll talk about Lance Armstrong and that steroids controversy. Racial tension in baseball. Does Jeff Kent have a clue? And the wild card races football and much, much more. It's 12 minutes past the hour. This is Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. Remember, you can't spell Lawton without W. Deal with it. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome to Sports Time here on Air America Radio. No, only kidding. It's Morning's Edition, 17 minutes past the hour. I'm Mark Riley, Dan Pashman, Chris Lopresto, yo, Brendan McDonald, all in the house. And we are going to talk about some sports. We're going to talk about some sports to somebody who knows all about it. There's a lot to talk about, and we're pleased to welcome back to Morning's Edition New York Times sports columnist William Roden. Bill, good morning. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mark. How you doing, man?
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, man. My pleasure.
Let me ask you to talk, first of all, about what seems to be a reignited racial controversy in baseball. We see, on the one hand, Milton Bradley, a guy who's got his own set of issues, saying that Jeff Kent, who's got his own set of issues as well, a teammate of his, doesn't know how to relate to African-Americans. And this, of course, comes on the heels of the firing of a talk show host at a sports station in California in the Bay Area for slamming Caribbean ballplayers. Is race becoming an ugly issue in baseball?
Well, you know, it's always been there, Mark. You know, I mean, it's never really gone away. And I think, particularly in baseball, you know, baseball is one of the sports, unlike football and basketball, where African Americans have really kind of, you know, dominated. Baseball has been sort of the sport that's still, you know, it's still one of the provinces of white folks. You know, that's still a sport they kind of look at as like theirs. And there's always been this kind of racial undertone. And Jeff Kent has, you know, he's always long been, I'm not to be suspect of being racist. I mean, that's a little harsh. But, you know, when he was Barry Bonds' teammate, there was always friction, you know, always friction.
But, Bill, wasn't he mentored by some black players early in his career?
I think that Kent has always, I mean, he always talked about Barry Bonds and double standards, and he always resented, you know, Bonds as sort of, he called him like a prima donna. I guess when you say he was mentored by some black players, I think there's always sort of a resentful attitude that Kent had. It was particularly with Barry Bonds. And, you know, if you look back, I think it was very interesting about this thing with the commentator who was fired.
Out in Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is that I was talking to Philippe Alou a couple of years ago.
Now, he's the Giants manager, and he was reacting to this talk show host calling Caribbean ballplayers, quote, brain-dead Caribbean hitters hacking at slop nightly.
Right.
Yeah. Guess he never saw Manny Ramirez play, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But the interesting thing about that, though, one of the things that Lou was saying is that back in the day, you know, when Lou was playing, there was Willie Mays and all that, that there was really a bond between the Hispanic ball players and the black ball players,
mm-hmm.
because they were all really, they all saw themselves kind of in the same boat. And he said what he saw, what he's seen happen with the young players, the young Hispanic players particularly, is more seeing them, they're seeing themselves kind of as different and apart.
From black people.
From black, yeah. And I think that what this did, what this incident did to those who were really astute, is that he said, you know what, you know, they see, you know, you're still in the same boat.
Still in the same boat, fantastic.
You're still seeing the same. So it's kind of like a wake-up call. So I mean, it's kind of a long, drawn-out answer to the question about race in baseball. But I think of all the major sports, you know, I'm talking about football, but there's always been a sort of latent racism in baseball. It's kind of like, quote-unquote, you know, the mainstream saying, you know, this is, quote-unquote, our sport.
Bill Roden is our guest. He's sports columnist for the New York Times. Bill, let's stay on baseball for a second. Frank Robinson, someone I know you've written extensively about, and now Curt Schilling, pitcher with the Boston Red Sox, have both said that Rafael Palmeiro's records should be wiped clean because he tested positive for steroids. What do you think? I mean, are they going too far here?
You know, that's really a good question. You know, at one point, I'd like to say, well, no, they're not really going too far. I think it's a little harsh. You know, I think it's a little harsh. I know Frank Robinson, he's been on the record.
Yeah.
He's been on the record.
He's been very outspoken. Do you think an asterisk would be less harsh but appropriate?
I just don't know. I mean, put it like this. I think in every generation of sports, athletes have found a way to take shortcuts. Every generation. And frankly, we really don't know, you know, I mean, steroids is something that's kind of been in the forefront, but we don't know if there were players on steroids, you know, before in the 60s and stuff like that, because you know, it's something that in the United States we've just become aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the 60s, there was something called, I've got a head cold so far.
That's okay.
In the 60s, there was something that was called, you know, red juice.
Okay.
That players were taking, you know, amphetamines were very, very, very common. You know, but it just wasn't a, you know, it just wasn't a big issue.
And no one was being tested back then, huh?
There was no testing, so there was nothing. So, you know what I'm saying? So I guess what I'm saying is that you don't know what people were doing. All I know is that being involved in athletics for almost 30 years, the athletes have always found a way. You know, so for one generation, you know, to start to be sanctimonious and say, oh, you know, we ought to put it. I said, no, I don't think there should be any asterisk. You know, I think that you start testing now, and, you know, let it be known. I think you increase the penalties. You know, people know, just like with Pete Rose. I mean, you know, they let it be known that in baseball, if you gamble on baseball, you will be kicked out of baseball. You will probably not get in the Hall of Fame. And the penalty is set. I think the same thing should be for steroids.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Rafael Palmeiro got a 10-game suspension for steroids. A kid who drank milk at the behest of a Florida Marlins baseball player got 6 days suspension.
Wow.
You know, and by the way, he didn't hold the milk down, but I don't know if that's why they got rid of him or what. But now let me ask you real quickly, Bill, about Lance Armstrong. Is he a victim here of French tabloid journalism, or do you think that he's been lying all this time about being clean?
Well, Mark, we have to be careful. I mean, you know, my thing has been sort of consistent with Barry Bonds is you're innocent
until proven guilty.
That has always been my thing. And I know with Armstrong, yes, I think it is a French thing. But, you know.
You got your suspicions, don't you?
Huh?
You got your suspicions.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. They've had their suspicions, too, for a long, long, long time.
Is it that because a guy who recovers from cancer isn't supposed to win that many Tour de France? Is that what it is?
Well, I think it's that, but they could be saying, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of mixed in with all the drugs you have to take, you know, to recover. Who knows, you know, I mean, who knows if somewhere along the line there isn't some type of, you know, benefit. But the point is that, you know, as deep as the suspicions may be, you know, he's been tested.
And he's tested negative every time.
They haven't caught him, and he's dominated. So, I mean, that's kind of has to be the standard.
That has to be the bottom line, yeah.
Standard. They have not caught him. They're testing mechanisms, and they have not caught him.
Bill, we're just about out of time, and we got to ask you, as a sports expert, who you got in the wild card races in Major League Baseball?
I don't have the Yankees.
Oh, man, you just made our man Chris Lopresto over here very happy. He's a Mets fan.
Well, you know what? I think the Mets are a great story. I mean, you know, thank goodness for the wild card.
You think they can make it?
Hey, man, the Mets are playing great. The Mets are really, really, really playing great. I like the Mets because I like Willie Randolph. But at the beginning, I like the Nationals. Because I like Frank Robinson.
Oh, okay. You know? You just like the teams with the brothers as managers.
Well, I mean, listen, man, you have to look at this as a long arc of history.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm the same way, man. I'm no different. Bill Roden, as always, it's been great to talk with you, man. We appreciate it. We hope to have you back on soon.
Hey, Mark, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All right, you take care.
Take care, man.
Bill Roden from the New York Times. I do that. I mean, let's be honest. All right, I'll be honest. You know, I root for the teams with the most brothers.
That's cool, man. I root for the Jews.
Ah, see? So Hank Greenberg is one of your special
Hank
people.
Hank Greenberg, Sean Green, Jesse Levis, former Cleveland Indians backup catcher.
Oh, okay. So you got the whole list. Stay with us. We're going to be back with more stuff on Morning's Edition. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Air America Radio.
Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, 34 minutes past the hour. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. And as we told you earlier this morning, the Walter Reed Army Medical Center has been described as the crown jewel of U.S. military hospitals. So why did the U.S.-based closing commission decide that it should be closed? We've got some truth on this issue from the director and founder of Operation Truth. A pleasure to welcome back to our microphones in studio, Mr. Paul Rakoff. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us. Walter Reed has had a national reputation since I was a kid. You know, they treated Warren Harding there. They treated Ronald Reagan there. You don't have as big a problem with the closing, perhaps, as the mayor of D.C. does. Why not?
Well, because I guess my people aren't going to lose money out of it. I guess that's the bottom line. For the soldiers, the care at Walter Reed's been fantastic. It really has. And I think there's a lot of places to criticize, but Walter Reed is really not one of them. Once they leave Walter Reed, we see a drop-off in care, especially for National Guardsmen and reservists when
really?
They go to the local communities.
Hold up. Before we get deep into Walter Reed, you just said something really profound here, that the care at Walter Reed is great, but once the soldiers leave Walter Reed, the care drops off. What happens?
Correct.
Who's dropping the ball here?
Well, say you live in Brooklyn, okay, and you leave Walter Reed and you get to the point where you still need to get physical rehabilitation or you're an amputee, you need to continue to get some kind of care. You go back to your local community and you'll go to the VA in Brooklyn. But the VAs are dangerously underfunded around the country. They're actually closing or reducing services at 11 of them around the country. They had to pass an emergency supplemental a few weeks ago just to be able to meet their budget. And especially for National Guards and Reservists, they could be sometimes hundreds of miles away from their local VA. So they've got to go back and forth with their families to get their treatment. So that's where we see a significant drop-off. Walter Reed is the crown jewel. You know, Cher and Bono, whoever else is going to come down there and shake your hand, and you're going to get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. But once you get back to your local community, sometimes the spotlight fades.
Wow. That is I know that there were a lot of people that were saying that about the VA here in Manhattan, the one that's not far from our studios, as a matter of fact.
Right.
That you know, it wasn't that the people were callous or uncaring, but there were just incredible backlogs of patients that needed to be seen. People didn't get their meds when they needed them. There was a lot of controversy about that, but they're cutting back at the same time they're telling the American people that the administration is doing everything it can for the soldiers.
Yeah, well, that's just not the truth. The Bush administration has consistently left the VA off the radar. It's not a priority for this administration. Secretary Nicholson, the head of the VA, went and testified before Congress about a month and a half ago that everything was fine. They had all the money they needed. There was no backlog. There was no backlog of cases or processing. And then he came forward about 2 weeks later and said, whoops, I screwed up. The number isn't 25,000 troops coming home and seeking care. It's actually 75,000, and we need $1.5 million immediately.
Wow.
In order to just keep the doors open. So they had to rush it through the Senate. It got to the House, and they actually bickered back and forth over this for about 3 weeks and finally shot it through. But the DA is dangerously underfunded. There's a lot of good people there, but they're working very hard with very little.
So, Paul, you're saying they bickered back and forth over $1.5 million for emergency care for veterans?
Yes, yes. And actually, they need at least $3 billion for next year. So we haven't even gotten into the next calendar year. They pushed this through right before they went into recess, and now they'll, I guess, try to address it when they come back in session next week. But it's just off the radar. President Bush has never stood up and said, you know what, I am committed to taking care of our veterans. I am going to make sure that they have the optimal care at every point throughout the process. It just hasn't happened. They asked him what people could do recently, and he said, fly a flag and write a letter. That's not enough. I mean, we need people, if they really support the troops, put your money where your mouth is, and a great place to start is the VA.
Paul Rieckhoff is our guest. He's director and founder of Operation Truth. Paul, we've seen various reactions to the base closings that are going on across America that have been proposed to go on, and most of them are now going to happen. Certainly in New London, they changed their minds. A couple of other places, they changed their minds. Before Monmouth in Jersey, they haven't changed their minds. Looking at it from the perspective of a veteran, of someone who served the country, how do you parse the necessity of having these bases to train troops and to make sure they're properly maintained and supported, and the issue of jobs for the larger community where these bases are located? How important an issue is that to the soldiers?
I think it's an important issue to the soldiers because where there are established communities, where these bases have been for a long time, the local people take pride. And that really does go a long way. I know that I train sometimes up at Camp Smith in Westchester County with the National Guard north of New York City. And the local community really takes pride in that facility. They chip in all the time, and they try to make the soldiers feel welcome every time they come on.
Oh, I've been up there at Camp Smith. Yeah, sure.
Walter Reed's been there for about 100 years, and everybody in that area takes tremendous pride. You can't build that overnight. But an important point to highlight is the fact that, you know, about 14,000 troops have been wounded, and about 5,000 have gone through Walter Reed. So that's something that we need to look at when we start to explore what's happening with these facilities. Don't forget that people are going through these facilities, and they're not getting nearly enough visibility, especially the wounded. We talk a lot about the almost 2,000 dead, but there are about 15,000 that have been wounded now, and maybe another 15,000 that have been injured, which don't get counted in that number. Those are folks who aren't...
There's a difference in terms of the way they parse injured and wounded.
The number you see on the screen is the number who were wounded as a result of enemy contact. They got shot, they got hit with shrapnel. There's probably at least the same number of people who have fallen off trucks, have been wounded in or hurt in helicopter accidents or accidental discharge. There's a million different ways you can get hurt in a theater of operations. And those people still are at Walter Reed, are still getting treatment, still need help, but are not counted in the Pentagon's big number.
And I just want to confirm, Paul, I mean, I think a lot of times we hear wounded, we people imagine a cut on a hand or something. Sometimes this is missing limbs. These are lifelong injuries that are very, very serious oftentimes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are close to, I think the latest number I saw is about 300 what they'll call TBI, traumatic brain injuries. These are severe brain trauma injuries. Each one of these guys, to give you an idea of scope, can sometimes cost up to $1 million a piece per year to treat.
Yeah, because that's long-term care you're talking about with a brain injury.
Exactly, exactly. So these guys are, you know, seriously messed up, and they really need care. And with the advances in body armor, the advances in trauma care, people are surviving wounds that would have killed them in past wars. So now they've got a tougher road ahead of them, and they need more.
Now, the people that need this help, are you confident that the closing of Walter Reed will not impact the delivery of services to them?
I mean, I don't have total confidence in anything the government's been doing lately, especially with regard to soldiers. So no, but I think that, you know, the people I've talked to in D.C. at Walter Reed and around the government have told us that it looks like they've got a good plan and they're going to stand up Bethesda as quickly as possible. We've got to ensure that it's absolutely and totally ready to go when they make that transition. The only real pause that people have had is that if there is a Homeland Security attack of some kind, people have expressed pause that you can't use Walter Reed because they're going to try to use Bethesda, which is going to be farther out the city, outside the city, which may impact their ability to respond to an NBC attack, a biological attack or chemical attack. But you know, what I'm hearing consistently is it's not that bad of a move. It's definitely going to affect the local community. But for the soldiers, you know, they're trying to focus on what we call the five-meter target, just getting themselves healthy and getting back into the swing of things.
Now, Paul, one thing that we've been reading a lot about lately that is a big concern for a lot of people is that homeless shelters around the country are starting to see Iraq war veterans come home and show up at these shelters. And one statistic that I find really alarming and that I've been trying to tell everyone I talk to, because I think it's so important, is that one out of every four adult male homeless people in America is a veteran. And conservatives are quick to look at homeless people and point the finger at them and say, you're not working hard enough. It's your fault that you're homeless. When many of these people were able-bodied, young, brave men and women who were sent off to war, and then when they came back, they just weren't the same anymore. And they weren't able to hold down a job, and they lost their home, they lost their family. And 20 years later, they're on the street, and we're now seeing a new generation of that starting to form. And many of these people have injuries that haven't even been seen yet, because sometimes it takes months after you come back. Tell us a little bit about the chain of events that takes place from the time that a healthy young man or woman gets sent to Iraq to the time that that person ends up on the street.
Sure. Let me give you the quick overview. First of all, it's happening again. And for those of you who saw what happened with Vietnam vets, I'm here to tell you it's starting to happen again. The numbers are small right now, but we're already seeing homeless Iraq and Afghanistan vets around the country. We've gotten calls just about every week. Hey, we heard about five more in L.A., a couple more in Cincinnati. They're starting to pop up around the country. And the primary reason is because they haven't learned from their mistakes. We still don't have adequate transitional facilities. If you get out of Rikers Island prison tomorrow, you'll get a transitional program. You'll get somebody to look in on you. You can apply for transitional housing. If you come back from Baghdad, you get pretty much zilch. Okay, you're not going to get someone to help you integrate back into society. And with about one-fifth of the guys coming home with mental health issues or post-traumatic stress disorder, and this is according to New England Journal of Medicine, there are guys who have this need. And if you bring them home and expect them to go from Baghdad one week to Brooklyn the next, they're going to have problems. And we're seeing that now. There are estimates that say there could be as many as 100 homeless Iraq vets in New York right now. We've seen
this in New York City.
In New York City right now. We've heard reports. We work with a lot of outreach groups that see these guys, and the numbers are climbing. We're going to launch a program in the next couple of months that will hopefully help deal with this. But there's a guy named Harold Noel who's gotten a bit of press from Brooklyn. There's a filmmaker working on a film about this. If you go to whenicamehome.com or check our website, operationtruth.com, there's more information about Harold and a lot of these other guys who are coming home.
Before we let you go, I saw a blog entry with your name on it that talks a little bit about an analogy you drew between Vince McMahon, the chairman of World Wrestling Entertainment, and our fearless leader, George W. Bush. What were you talking about there, Paul?
Okay, well, anybody who watches wrestling knows that McMahon's a genius. Like him or not, he's a genius. Marketing genius, promotional genius. And I drew a parallel between the fact that every time ECW or a competing wrestling organization would come up with a star, McMahon would come up with a counter.
Yeah.
And Cindy Sheehan has dominated the headlines lately. And it was interesting to see that last week, George Bush found a woman named, I think it's Tammy Pruitt.
Tammy Pruitt, yeah.
Who has four sons in the military serving in Iraq. And he, you know, cherry-picked this lady out of somewhere, and now he's his counter to Cindy Sheehan. I mean, it's a perfect, you know, matchup in WWE. And no disrespect to any of the families that are involved here, but it's a beautiful PR move. He's got Cindy Sheehan. And it's damaging his credibility, hitting his popularity numbers. So he finds this other mother to counter and say, hey, look, here's one from our side.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, of course, we're going to see that ramped up a little bit next month when they have the big rally down at the Capitol, you know, saluting the troops. And you know, Clint Black is going to perform. My guess is he's not going to do Bring the Boys Home anytime soon.
Yeah, seriously.
So they're also going to continue to mix Iraq with 9/11 throughout that protest march, whatever the heck they're calling it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it when it's sponsored by the Department of Defense.
I think it's a propaganda march, is what it is.
Last time that got together by the Department of Defense. It was called a war. We all went over to Iraq. I got my butt shot at for a few months.
There you go. Paul Rakoff, people can access Operation Truth at www.optruth.org.
Yep, optruth.org, operationtruth.com. It all works, and we need help each and every day to continue to push these guys out into the media, get vets heard, and talk about the issues surrounding the war in Iraq. So we appreciate everyone's help.
All right. We appreciate your time with us this morning. Paul Rakoff is the director and founder of Operation Truth. Thanks again, Paul.
Thank you, fellas. Thanks, appreciate Paul. It. Thanks.
We are going to shift gears in a minute. We're going to have Cardinal Milfington in the house.
Yes, Rapture Watch time.
Rapture Watch. And we're going to get the latest word from News Daddy on body waxing.
And we also have Cindy Sheehan coming up live from Crawford, Texas very soon.
All for you on Morning Sedition. It's 46 minutes past the hour. Air America Radio.
Dateline, New York, the city we built on rock and roll. Hi, kids. This is your War on Brains correspondent, Mort Milfington, reminding you to always stay informed. And when you can't do that, try listening to Morning Sedition every morning here on Air America Radio. Your Xanadu.
One minute past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. The Morning Sedition crew is here. D-Pash, K-Lo, and B-Mac.
Yo.
You like that, boy? I gave them all hip-hop handles. You like that? The Bible's Book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. One of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you get caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Missoula, Montana. Your Grace.
Come up hither, ye cave-dwelling hedonites of Sodom. You've lingered far too long in the Carlsbad caverns of sin. And soon the fuzzy-butted bats of Beelzebub will leave their gunny sack of guano on your doorstep. Gaze one last time at the folly of your ravenous appetite for sweetmeats, gluttons, before you embark on your everlasting plummet towards Gomorrah. You've just been Timberlaked. And the tasseled milk nub of your insidious pleasure pillow exposed to the wrathful vengeance of an angry and very disappointed God. For your soul has turned into a styrofoam box of regret, and your heart become a tar-covered breakfast biscuit still hot from the oven of Chef Satan. Now served with 100% stowed ground corn grits from Georgia. In short, you're all in big trouble. As you may recall, thrice hebdominos ago, I told a few about a truck driver who was killed by a melon. The week after that, I told you about a woman in Arizona who was stung 400 times by bees. And the week after that, I told you about that guy getting killed by a melon again. Why? Because it's funnier than the bee story. But now something even funnier has happened. So funny, it could only have been planned by the devil himself. Giant frogs are invading France. Yes. More lethal than Claudine Langer and bigger than Corporal LeBeau. These amphibious antichrists eat fish, lizards, and even small birds. Little rabbi small, A-E-C, D-A-R-T-S. Sacre bleu. Oh-ho! For it was prophesied, dans les révélations, c'est day. Asia sight, seat, or whatever. And then there appeared from the mouth of a beast, a frog. A lady then swallowed the frog. She swallowed the frog to get the fly. I don't know why she swallowed the fly. I guess she'll die. There once was a lady who swallowed a snake. Before you know it, Bob Crane was found dead in a sheep pounder. Life is funny that way. Mon Dieu! Oh, tasa montita campata! End quota.
Oh, God.
And there you have it. What do you expect from a country that puts two dots over their E's, worships Jerry Lewis, and crams large amounts of corn down the throats of ducks? Until their diseased livers bloat 12 times their normal size to a fine, buttery consistency. Blasphemers! Only Jesus has the right to plunge 13 pounds of crap down a poor animal's gullet, rip out its internal organs, and serve them the fat people. Never mind that now, because while you Earth dwellers are down here battling Satan's frog army, I'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus and his pet salamander, Sticky. So until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating. Et nous gardons la lumière en fonction pour vous. Dans l'enfer!
Oh my god!
Dans l'enfer!
I haven't read heard that much French since I read the last issue of L'Équipe, which is the one, of course, that dogged your boy Lance Armstrong. Thank you so much, Cardinal!
You're welcome, Mark Wiley.
Mark Wiley?
And Dan Pushman.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. So you're trying to make me feel better that you don't really hate black people, right?
What? I never said any such thing.
Yeah, right. That's why News Daddy's coming to send you to your maker.
Oh, all no. I'm asking is why there just isn't a White Roots.
White Roots?
Yeah.
Why isn't there White Roots? I don't know. You got White Roots.
You guys get all the attention.
Who's you guys?
Well, you guys.
You guys?
You.
Who, us brothers? What do you mean we get all the attention?
I'm not going
oh,
to.
Oh, yeah. Use. We craved attention when we were slaves.
Well, yeah. You were always whining.
Whining?
Whining.
Whining.
Whine, whine, whine. I'm a slave. I'm a slave.
Did you give him like, some Nembutal or something before the show?
I wow. had wondered about Jim Earl for the longest time since I started working.
I never liked you, man.
Yeah, you know.
It's News Daddy.
It's
England.
Coming out now.
Yes.
It's all coming out now.
Well, now that we've got News Daddy and Jim Earl in here, so we have to drop the cardinal pretense, I guess.
Okay.
Do either one of you body wax?
Body wax.
Body wax.
Have you seen Jim Earl's body? There's nothing to wax.
All right. So let me just put some tape on his hair and pull that out on top of his head.
Yeah, the hairiest scrotum in radio.
Hairiest scrotum in radio.
That's why he's in radio.
Yeah, that's why he's in radio. So he can talk bad about black people when we were slaves.
What about you, Wayne? Are you into the body waxing?
No, I'm not. Actually, I none of my past relations, I encourage that sort of thing. I think there's something very exotic about here.
Wait a minute. You talking about your past relations with men? We're talking about men's body waxing.
Women.
Women?
Yeah, I'm
you
heterosexual.
Sure? You're heterosexual?
You know, Mr. Riley, I know
you
this,
sure?
This show has gotten to your head all week long.
No, man, I'm going on vacation, pal. You can't do nothing for me.
You know, I see you dogging people left and right.
There's who do I dog left and right?
There was a kill Whitey said before I got in here this morning.
Oh, you know? We're going to bring that back now that Jim Earl has insulted all blacks. That's right.
You know.
We're going to get him an invite from DJ Pumpster to go to the next kill Whitey party. So you can, you know, hang out with other hipsters just like you.
I'm not a hip-hop guy.
Yeah, but you're a hipster, aren't you? Don't you consider yourself to be hip?
I'm very hip,
Look, look, you're gyrating, man. I can hear the music in the back. You look just like Beyonce. Anyway. In our final hour of Morning's Edition for this week, ladies and gentlemen.
Maybe the final.
Listen, News Daddy. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. We're going to also be talking about a new play on Jenna Bush coming up next. This is Air America Radio. Six minutes past the hour. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron is on vacation. We've got the Morning's Edition crew in the house. Dan Pashman is here.
Hi.
Chris Lopresto is here.
Hey.
Brendan B. Mac McDonald is here. There's a black guy. I forgot his name. Oh, yeah. Wayne Gilman, News Daddy, is here.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, thanks so much.
Uh-huh.
And we want to say a special good morning to our friends in Florida and anyone else who might be in the path of this Hurricane Katrina, because apparently it didn't stop with Florida. It's running across the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
And might hit some of the other southern states.
And they anticipate that storm to come up this way the latter part of next week.
Next week? What?
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm getting out. Well, we're on vacation next week. I'm on vacation.
Yeah, you keep saying
the rest
we,
of you
right?
all are on. Well, I like to use we in the most general, generic, you know, we. The larger
some of us
we.
Are on vacation.
Some of us.
Yes.
You're not on vacation, man?
Actually, I'm taking a couple of days.
That's what he... See, Wayne does that every week, though.
Right,
he takes a couple of days every week.
No,
don't
even come up. Another one of Robbie's
just a quick
canards.
Note for our listeners. I do want to let everyone know that we will have Cindy Sheehan coming up in this hour very soon. She's down in Crawford, Texas. We're going to have her shortly. We're waiting on her. But Riley, I echo your sentiments. We do wish the best to everyone down there in Florida for the hurricane. Hopefully everyone's found a safe place to be. And I guess it's coming up here. Hopefully it won't be quite as strong when it gets up this way.
Yeah, and it's, what, four people have died. 1.3 million people, as of earlier this morning, were without power in South Florida. That means Wayne's vast land holdings are going to be a little bit. Because, you know, the man has holdings all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. Man cannot live by news alone.
There you go. Even though, well, should we call you Land Daddy?
Suit yourself.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're seeing some very interesting things because as we get ready to speak to Cindy Sheehan, now there are, you know, she has drawn so much attention to protest and to anti-war protesting. You know, the American Legion has seen fit to come out and say at their national convention that the public should not publicly protest the war. And they are prepared to do whatever necessary to see to it, A, that the public doesn't do that, and B, if they do, that the media doesn't actually cover it.
Right.
Yet, an AP Ipsos poll says that 90% of the people they surveyed want to see Americans maintain the right to protest against this war. This is not just a general question about protest. They specifically talked about critics of the Iraq war. And 90% of Americans said that people should be free to voice their opposition publicly.
Kind of amazing, Mark Riley and Wayne, that these members of the American Legion, most of whom fought, saw their comrades die, many of whom were wounded in battle, supposedly defending the basic freedoms of this country, would then come out and oppose the same freedoms that they went to war to protect.
Kind of question if they're Americans to begin with. You know?
I agree.
Yeah, this is true.
It's fundamentally anti-American to tell someone that they don't have a right to criticize the government.
Yeah, it's incredible.
There is nothing more American than criticizing the government. If you want to listen where no one criticizes the government, move to Iran.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, the same poll says that only 37% of the American people support and approve of the way the Bush administration is handling the war.
Mm-hmm.
That's an incredible stat. That is an incredible stat.
And no matter what he does to turn the situation around, I mean, he's been on the stump, especially since Cindy Sheehan has surfaced, you know, to see if he can show up his support for what he's doing. It doesn't seem to be having any kind of impact.
No, it's a Bush propaganda initiative. Right. And that was what Tammy Pruitt was to some extent about. And again, we are not trying to disparage in any way, shape, or form the fact that she has four of her sons serving in Iraq.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I salute them all, no matter what their position on the war, because they put themselves in harm's way on behalf of the country. And I have no problem with that.
I still maintain if one, and I'm saying God forbid here because I wouldn't want to wish this on anyone, but if one of her sons were to suddenly return in a body bag, I wonder how her feelings would be at that point.
She said publicly that if one of them did, she would continue to support the war. Now, you don't know because she hasn't had that experience. And you know, Cindy Sheehan, I think, has never said that she represents the views of all people who have lost sons and daughters in Iraq. And,
right.
you know, as Paul Rykoff just pointed out, we tend to focus on the U.S. war dead, the number of dead, and we should. It's over 1,870. But there are 15,000 people who have been injured and wounded in Iraq. And I think we have to pay attention to that as well. We are now going live to Camp Casey, and we're going to say good morning to Ms. Cindy Sheehan. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, Cindy.
Thank you.
Glad to hear you.
You know, what we have to think about, too, is the tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis that have been killed. We should never forget them and always speak about them, too.
Absolutely. You're right. How's your mom doing, by the way, first and foremost?
My mom is receiving physical therapy now, and her right side's getting stronger, and as long as she doesn't have another stroke, she should recover somewhat.
Well, that's good to hear. Absolutely good to hear.
Thank you.
How has it been back in Crawford since your return?
Well, it is a lot hotter, and it's just been amazing. When I got here the other day, I couldn't believe what's happened since I left, and everybody is just, you know, so.
What has happened, Cindy?
Well, we set up Camp KC2 in Fred Matlich's field, and we have like this big tent that seats so many people. We have a lot of shade. We have a medic now. We have a chapel, and we're just like able to spread out. We don't have to stay in the ditch, which makes it a little more conducive to living. So it's really just amazing. And there's hundreds of people here, and there's going to be just, you know, I think probably 2,000 here over the weekend.
Wow.
So yeah.
It's just awesome. It's just amazing. And I couldn't, I never could believe that I would, have enjoyed this experience as much as I've enjoyed it.
I understand the Reverend Al Sharpton from our area is actually coming down over the weekend as well. Cindy, when you look at the president's reaction to you, we've seen him 3 days this week consecutively speaking directly, it seemed, to you, saying, you know, bringing forward a woman, Tammy Pruitt, who we talked about a little bit earlier, who has family in Iraq, and saying, you know, not all Americans, implying that most Americans agree with her and not with you. How did you feel when you saw that?
Well, number one, I feel so sorry for her, and I feel so sorry for her family that, and her sons, that she's willing to give somebody up, that she thinks this is a noble cause, and that she'd be willing to give one of her children up. I just can't believe that, and that breaks my heart. And I think another thing is, she doesn't represent the majority of Americans. You know, the majority of Americans think that this war is a mistake, and they want our troops to start coming home. And just him talking, spending so much time talking about me. If he had come down the first day and talked to me, we wouldn't be in this situation.
What do you think it is that he's nervous about? I mean, you know, he does have a reputation for not wanting to talk to people who disagree with him on policy issues. But it would seem to me that you're right. He could have diffused this entire thing. Now, a couple of weeks ago, if had he come and sat down and talked with you, spent an hour, spent 2 hours, spent as long as it took, and maybe you wouldn't have been satisfied with his answers, but at that point, he would have done what you asked him to do. Why do you think he's avoiding that?
Well, you know, at this point, he can't. I think the only time he could have talked to me would have been the first day. And after that, there's no way that he would have backed down and came down and talked to me. I just really feel like he knows that that America is behind us, and it's really I think maybe he's just realizing, you know, what's happening in America now. And you know what? I heard some policy people say that words, but they underestimated the impact that I was
going to
have.
Yeah.
They might have also misunderestimated it, Cindy.
I was going to say
but,
that.
Right.
it's too early. I couldn't get that word.
I wanted to ask you, Cindy, we all observed here on Morning Sedition that it seemed like as soon as you left to go tend to your mother, all of a sudden all these counter-protesters, these people who opposed what you were doing and all of us who stand behind you, all of a sudden started coming out of the woodwork. It seemed to me somewhat cowardly that they waited until you left to all show up. What do you make of their timing?
Well, all the counter-protesters are just a handful, you know. The mainstream media makes it seem like, you know, that there's a lot of them. It's not. It's just a handful. And, you know, people always accuse me of being funded in a tool of the left, which is absolutely, you know, preposterous. Any money we have is grassroots donations. And I understand that the people that are coming Move America Forward are funded by the by a big Republican organization. So, you know, I don't really think that much about it because we have the right to be doing what we're doing and they have the right to do what they're doing. So, you know, it's just, you know, what has happened and what I said before I started is that, you know, the problem in this country is we're so apathetic, you know, and what we did here in Crawford has made people get off the fence and, you know, whatever side they fell on, at least people are doing something, you know, they're standing up and speaking for what they believe in.
Absolutely.
You know? And we're just really pleased that most of America is standing on our side of the fence.
Absolutely. Cindy Sheehan, before we let you go, it seems as though the Gold Star Mothers have a plan to perhaps follow President Bush outside of Crawford, huh?
Yes, we're going to do a bus tour on September 1st, and we're going to head to D.C., and we're going to all meet. We're going to have three buses going through different parts of the country. We're going to, you know, stop at different places, you know, gathering support and meeting with our supporters, too, that couldn't come to Camp Casey. And then we're all going to meet together at the United for Peace and Justice event in D.C.
Fantastic.
On September 24th.
Cindy Sheehan, thank you so much for talking with us, being with us on Morning's Edition today.
I miss you guys.
We miss you, too. You take care, huh?
Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right.
And that group Move America Forward that Cindy referred to, which is funding the few counter-protesters down there in Crawford, they are funded by the California Republican Party, Riley.
Oh, wow.
And so they are a big-time, multi-million-dollar operation. Kind of ironic that the accusations that were made against Cindy Sheehan, that she was a tool of the left, that she was being funded by some kind of big donors, turned out to be total lies. She is the real deal. She is grassroots. But Tammy Pruitt, I believe, you know, and God bless her children for serving the country, but she's a tool of the right. And the people now down there counter-protesting are all being funded by multi-million-dollar Republican donors.
Absolutely. You know what we got coming up? Maybe Dan Pashman doesn't know, but I do.
I think we're going to play some bets. Is that right, Riley?
We're going to play some bets, so get your money down. Johnny K Street's next on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. My name is Mark Riley. The Morning's Edition crew is here. Coming up, Melissa Rauch, who is the writer and the featured actress in a new play on Jenna Bush called The Miseducation of Jenna Bush, will be joining us live in studio. But first, there are lots of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby. It figures Maron isn't here. He owes me a few yards.
Well, yeah, he'll be back in a couple of weeks.
All right, I know where he lives. Anyhow, let's get down to business. I'm being deposed at the Gotti trial. Long story.
Hey, Johnny, speaking of the Gotti trial, what do you think about Victoria Gotti lying about being diagnosed with breast cancer?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. I never felt anything funny. Are we on the air?
Yes, we're on the air.
Okay, a rock action is heating up.
Whoa. What about Victoria Gotti, Johnny?
Wonderful woman, a saint, and a fine family. Good people. Where were we? Oh, yeah, where are we going to stay in Iraq or are we going to pull out? Who knows? To tell you the truth, I'm more worried about Iran. Sean Penn is over there. He's an old friend. You never know what the hell he's going to do. He punches the wrong guy, and the next thing you know, they're launching the missiles they say they don't have. If Sean Penn ends up in jail, the odds of us doing anything to get him out, I'd say 10,000 to 1.
Oh, wow.
There's a better chance of Bush giving Cindy Sheehan a foot massage and a ride on his handlebars.
Yo, Johnny, I'm down for 100 on that. By the way, what did you think about Pat Robertson saying the United States should assassinate Venezuela's Hugo Chavez?
I don't know anything about it, and I don't know nothing about the time Pat Robertson tried to whack Jim Baker because he thought he was taking too much of his action.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know about the other six or seven people he's had whacked over the years either.
You're kidding me. Pat Robertson has killed seven people?
You're kidding me? The guy has more hits than Jerry Vail. He did a few himself.
Wait a minute. I've never heard that.
Oh, he's gotten wet, believe me. He could take you out like that and sit down to a nice dinner of steak pizza like it never happened. He's like ice.
I didn't know any of this.
You didn't hear it from me. Doesn't take much to set him off. I heard he beat a guy unconscious right in his church because he forgot the words to Amazing Grace. He's an animal. I'll give you 100 to 1. Pat Robertson will take someone out before the year is over.
I'll take that for a C note.
Yeah, put me down for 5, Johnny.
Say hallelujah.
What other kind of action we're looking at here, Johnny?
All right, this is my bet of the week. The Iraq Constitution is supposed to be approved any day now. Well, probably today, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen those negotiations on the news? The last time I saw that many guys with turbans arguing, somebody cut into the cab line in front of the garden. You know what I'm saying? The odds on them approving the Iraq Constitution today, 1,001.
Yo, put me down for 100, Johnny.
Yeah, put me down for 500, Johnny, and put Maron down for a grand, too. Hey, what the hell? Make it 2 grand. It's Marin's money.
And I like the way you think. You're coming like Carl Rove with a flake alibi. I gotta get to work.
All right, man.
Take it easy.
Be careful, Johnny.
Later, Johnny.
Wow, and say hi to Victoria for us, will you? My goodness.
That guy knows everyone, that Johnny K Street.
I know, man.
He is connected,
he's
man.
He's a whirlwind. I should have asked him about the body waxing thing.
Yeah, I have a feeling he might take exception to that, Riley.
You think it's too girly, man, for him?
Yeah, I don't think Johnny K Street would want you even suggesting that he knows anything about body waxing.
Why not?
Because he's comfortable in his own manhood. Yeah.
You think he's comfortable enough in his own manhood?
Yeah. But, you know, we're talking about that story in the news about how more and more men are getting comfortable with body waxing and their girlfriends or wives are getting them to get waxed in various parts of their body. But there's an interesting part of that story that wasn't in that story, but I learned when I was working temping over at a massive international beauty product conglomerate, which is
that. What is that, Avon?
Unilever.
Oh, okay. Right, well,
what's that?
There's been a concerted effort in recent years to get men more comfortable with using a lot of different beauty and health type products because they feel like they have maxed out women. They can't get any more out of the women. So they've been working for years now to make men comfortable with the idea of having a loofah sponge and four different kinds of shampoo and
waxing. Worked with Bill O'Reilly, didn't they?
Yeah, right.
My God, you mean they're trying to get us to use women's products? Is that the idea?
No, similar kinds of products. They're repackaging them and remarketing them for men to make it quote unquote okay.
What's next? Summer's Eve for men?
Could be.
Oh, yeah. It's starting to scare me.
Hey, Rad, did you ever get that not so fresh feeling?
Yeah. I use mouthwash, okay? Yeah. We're going to talk to Melissa Rauch and Winston Beagle, and they're from the play The Miseducation of Jenna Bush. Coming up next, it's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, 27 minutes past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four minutes past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley, and we're on Air America Radio. Our next guests would like to invite Jenna Bush to their new production, which is currently part of the New York International Fringe Festival. Please welcome the star and co-writer of The Miseducation of Jenna Bush, Melissa Rauch, and Melissa's co-writer, Winston Beigel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Now, Brendan B. Mac McDonald is here because he's been secretly in love with Jenna Bush for eight... No, only kidding. But he does...
I do like the Bush twins.
Yeah, he does like the Bush twins. He doesn't see them, I guess, as the he doesn't see Jenna as the drug crazed, alcohol crazed slut that most Americans apparently.
Yeah, I see her as a college kid that she was, you know. But I was interested in that in terms of this play.
Yeah,
what do you bring to the table, Melissa, in terms of your characterization of Jenna? Was it something that you looked at? You know, that this was a fun character to play, or did you just want to kind of humanize her?
You know, originally we started off and I thought, wow, Jenna just seems like such a fun party girl. It'd be so great to play her. And it is. It's wonderful. I'm having a blast. But as we started writing, I just realized she must be just like every other college girl, you know, just figuring out life and her relationships with her family. So I think it just kind of naturally happened and just felt close to her after a while.
Why do you think that Jenna has been certainly more covered and maybe even more interesting than her twin sister?
Even at the convention, you could see that Jenna just has that vibrance and she just enjoys everything. And you could see in the convention, the Republican convention, she's standing there, she's making her speech, and after every joke she makes, she totally just has this laugh. She's just enjoying it. She turns to her sister at one point and she says, "They are so loving us." And I think she just has that. You're totally just intrigued by her, you know?
Sort of the difference between Yale and UT Austin.
That's the difference.
That's it. It's
but
totally
you know,
it.
See, you get a feeling that one day Barbara's going to pick up like a claw hammer and do somebody up because of this.
Absolutely. You can totally see Barbara just elbowing her under the podium like, shut up.
Right? Now, how do you get in character to play someone who has been as well-covered and well-exposed, maybe the wrong word, as Jenna Bush?
Well, you know, I think if I did all the research needed for the part, you know, the party and everything, I think I'd end up in a hospital. But it's a lot of, you know, external stuff. He did, you know, to make me look like her, dye my hair, get a fake tan, putting in brown contacts.
Oh, my goodness.
Things like that.
She can get into that character pretty quickly, though.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. If you want to put her on the spot, she probably can handle it.
Yeah, really? We got time. Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
It's early, but let's...
Yeah.
I'm sure Jenna's not up right now, but...
She doesn't have coffee.
That's right. She might be partying at this time. What's up, America? Jenna Bush, come down and see my show, y'all.
Ooh.
Now, when you guys wrote this, did you have just the Texas... the Longhorn throw in Jenna in your head the whole time, or did you have some kind of inner struggle that you wanted to throw out there in the script?
The show was originally we were writing a piece about what it's like to be in the now what phase of your life. You know, when you get out of college and you're sort of lost and trying to find your way, and it occurred to us that Jenna was probably going through that same phase in her life right now. So,
you know, I always thought that. I always thought that both Bush twins, really seemed like the typical rebellious youth, and yet they acquitted themselves fairly well in the press. But yet you still hear stories about how Jenna opposed the execution of Carla Faye Tucker under her father's governorship, and how Barbara was wanting to work with children in Africa and AIDS prevention. I read in the New York Times review of your show that they said that you kind of, in turn of humanizing a Jenna Bush, you also shine a little light on the father, as we'll call him. Did you have any intention or know that you were going to be doing that when you wrote this, or was this just a kind of a larf?
Well, apple can't fall that, far from the tree.
And, right.
You see a lot of Bush in his daughter, that's for sure, but, if he wanted to sort of interpret the play that way, that's really, that's going to happen, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think most young people relate to Jenna Bush? And let me tell you the genesis of this question. Every day, I come into work, and I come into work at an ungodly hour in the morning, between, 4 and 4:30 in the morning. And as the week progresses, as we come through Midtown Manhattan here in New York, we see more and more armies of drunk young people out in the street after the bars here close. So we see, and Brendan has seen the same thing. We'll see like three and four, clusters of people along 34th Street as I'm coming. One morning, there was like a stoop that a bunch of people, it looked like Abu Ghraib. I mean, there were people all stretched out and twisted up and stuff. Do you think that maybe young people relate to her, even what most people would consider to be her excesses?
I do think that. I think that that every woman for our generation, especially the Jenna that we've created in our show, we read recently that she was at a U2 concert just partying it up with people our age, of our generation, and Bono was on stage bashing her father, and she was in the front row just rocking out like, hell yeah!
Oh, wow.
And reportedly applauding.
So, applauding Bono for bashing Pops.
Yeah,
I think the moment that I kind of softened on the Bush twins, and particularly Jenna, was that they outraced a Secret Service car to get to a wrestling event at Madison Square Garden.
Notoriously. Notorious for losing their Secret Service detail.
Right, yeah. And some might take them to task for that, but I don't know. They seem to me like real kids and real people with real issues. So I'm interested to see the show. Now, when is it? The last performance in the Fringe Festival is today, is that correct?
Yes, we have a show today at 2 p.m. at the Village Theater. That's our last Fringe show. Take an early Friday, come out to see it. There should be some tickets left.
That's 158 Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village here in New York City. But this is not the end of the play, huh?
It's not. Jenna continues. We hope to do a run probably sometime in October. You can get more information about that at www.miseducation.com, miseducation.com, and we'll keep you posted on future runs.
Now, is that miseducation one word, or...?
Yeah.
Yes. Separate. Okay, it's miseducation one.
MISSEducation.com.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I've seen plenty of shows in the Fringe, and it takes a lot to break out of the pack here in New York City. And you definitely been getting some press on this show. Do you feel like a momentum with this that's gonna take you elsewhere with this show?
We hope so. It's it's so fun to do, and we seem to be getting a great reaction. So we'd love to ride on this heat from the Fringe and continue with
it. Right, we also got a little notoriety, Melissa. We'll point out to our audience if they might slightly recognize her voice. It's could be from VH1's Best Week Ever, which I'm sure has helped you attract some crowd to the show. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been getting a lot of Best Week Ever fans down there, and there's a lot of pop culture references in the show that go right along with Best Week Ever.
What's that show like? How's it like to do that? If anybody knowing it's under a rock and doesn't know what that show is, it's the kind of pop culture Cuisinart of the week, where they cut up every little clip from the week that was in pop culture and dissect it. So what's that like? You just get to make funny comments on what you see during the course of the week, or do you keep a journal and jot it down every time you see something screwy going on TV?
Definitely. I mean, the writers on the show are great. They give us topics every week, and we're allowed to bring stuff in, and we just are allowed to riff on the week. It's awesome. You know, I love talking about pop culture in general, so it's great, you know, to have an outlet to talk about. It's been much better than talking to my dry cleaner about it. No offense, Maylin. I absolutely love talking to you about pop culture, but it's great to do it on TV. It's an awesome show.
Now, when you jump something off from a festival like this, do you want to have an extended run here in New York? Do you want a tour? Or what would be your preference here?
I definitely would love to start out in New York. I mean, New York is less New used York. To... Yeah, I love New York City, and we'd also love to tour with it. I think there's a lot of great places we can go. Love to go to Austin and...
Oh, yeah, that would be good. Maybe Crawford. Yeah. Do they have a theater? Well, you could do it at the Peace House in Crawford.
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it. Take it on the road.
Well, you can take it today at 2 o'clock. At the Village Theater, that's 158 Bleecker Street. Ticket information can be accessed by calling 212-279-4488. And if you can't make it today at 2, keep looking on miseducation.com. That's one word, MISSeducation.com, for news about where the play will be coming back in the fall. Melissa and Winston, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Much appreciated. We are going to wrap and tie this thing, Brendan McDonald.
Yeah, it's been a good week, Riley.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
It's a little sad with our compatriot Mark Maron being gone, but I think...
Oh, now see that, Chris.
Well, I was being diplomatic, but I appreciate your comment, Chris.
You think he's out of the swimming pool yet, in that volcano or wherever
that's
it is?
I was hoping that the volcano trip on the helicopter went okay, but we'll check in with Mark Maron over the weekend, see how he's doing on Hawaii.
Well, you know what's interesting? Now, he's out there in Hawaii at the same time the American Legion's in Hawaii. You think he's doing like maybe a couple of gigs while he's out there for the Legionnaires?
Yeah, he can never be too sure what he's doing, you know, rabble-rousing out there.
All right, well, we're going to do a little rabble-rousing. With the time we have left, stay with us. It's 44 minutes past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Dan Pashman, hey. Brendan McDonald, Chris Lopresto, and another white guy are all here with us in studio.
You're surrounded, Riley.
I'm surrounded, man. I'm doomed. Anyway, before we let you go today, Jim Earle, the fourth Beatle, yeah, he's the one. Right. He's going to tell us what we've been discussing all day. Good morning, sir.
That's right, Mark. Morning. Well, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talk about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition, Cliff Notes.
This might be the best Cliff Notes ever.
Yeah, I think so.
Before we get into it.
The White House is getting defensive about criticism over President Bush's five-week vacation. Spokesman says the only reason George Bush is taking 5 weeks off is that the White House is being renovated. The renovation is actually ahead of schedule because, according to contractors, quote, the Oval Office looks like it hasn't been used in the last 5 years. White House says the president has a full schedule while he's in Crawford, with NASCAR on TV and that Dukes of Hazzard marathon on Nickelodeon coming up. He'll barely have time to take his 3-hour nap, everybody.
Ooh.
On the weather front, Hurricane Katrina is causing death and destruction in southern Florida. And it's threatening the MTV Awards in Miami. The awards show plans to add a new category, best shaky camera shot of hurricane winds sucking Christine Aguilera out of a hotel window. Oh, man! In other news, President Bush has been invited to attend the Islamic Society of North America's annual conference. Bush says he'll consider it, and by consider it, he meant he'll ride his bike around Crawford and think about other stuff. The Muslim convention is being held in Chicago over Labor Day weekend, or as baggage greeters at O'Hare Airport call it, Hell Week. Hell Week.
Oh, yeah.
Today's phrase, just drop it into any conversation. They invited Bush to an Islamic conference? Wake up, sheeple. The B'nai B'rith never invited Hitler. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today.
Mr. Earl?
Yeah, what?
Did you just say B'nai B'rith?
B'nai B'rith.
B'nai B'rith.
B'nai B'rith.
How long you been living here, pal?
I don't know. You know, I have so many Jewish friends, yet I don't ever pay attention to their culture.
Mr. Liberal. I got so many Jewish friends.
I'm living with a Jewish girl, and I don't even know. I don't know anything about those people.
Those people. Oh, I see.
I think this was great having Jim in here today. It was kind of like how Saturday Night Live has switched up their weekend their weekend update anchors.
Right.
Like Jim was kind of a Norm MacDonald to Mark Maron's Colin Quinn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But Mark Maron can read.
Oh, that's true. So Mark Maron isn't exactly Colin Quinn.
What about Jimmy Fallon and that other unfunny girl that he's always with?
Yeah, that's Kalo.
Tina Fey.
Oh!
I'll take that. All right.
Oh, you some heartless white people. Now, what do you guys got planned for the weekend?
Oh, lots of fun. I'm going to go check out the Giants-Jets preseason game tonight.
Oh, that's tonight?
Yeah.
I'm going with him.
I'm bringing Brandon.
Yeah.
I'm a little bummed that Eli's not going to be there, you know, but...
Eli Manning.
Eli Manning, the quarterback. Now, wait a minute. Who do they got?
They got Matt Hasselbeck, brother of Seattle Seahawks quarterback Tim Hasselbeck, and husband of Elizabeth Hasselbeck from The View.
Yeah. Wow. That probably should be at the top of the
resume. Right, seriously.
And is he grandson of Barbara Walters from The View or something?
Yeah, right.
My God.
But and then I'm hoping to, I'm going out to the Bohemian Beer Garden in Queens on Saturday afternoon. Kalo and Brendan are going to come meet up, and we're gonna have a couple of drinks.
Yeah, why don't you just tell everybody who hates you.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
the Bohemian Beer Garden.
Will you give that address, please?
In Secaucus, New Jersey. That's where it is.
A Bohemian Beer Garden.
What about you, Riley? What are you going to be up to?
I really
have. Drunk Corps?
I'm thinking I'm going to go up to Connecticut, up to West Haven, Connecticut, tomorrow to see a Drunk Corps contest. And this is a special trip for me because I always see people because I grew up in Connecticut.
Right.
And I don't see a lot of people that I knew from when I was growing up all the time. But when I go up to West Haven, I invariably run into about a dozen people I haven't seen in 30 years. So it's a wonderful trip.
Cool.
And, you know, I've seen you two off in the last 3 hours, Earl, so don't say nothing, all right?
Drum Corps?
Drum Corps, you heard it. Drumcorps. Corps.
Was this guy's beating on drums and stuff?
No, it's guys beating on white people and stuff. What are you talking about? Yeah, it's Drum Corps.
Drums?
Horns, drums, flags.
All right.
Music.
What about you, Jim? You got any plans for the weekend? You're going to be like killing some babies or something?
Yeah, I'm going to be the row behind you, even Brendan.
Yelling out annoying game? Crap.
Yeah. Oh, you're into sports now that we named the team after you.
Yeah, go Niners! Go Reds!
Actually, you know, I was wondering, guys, Dan, you are going to the Giant game and bringing Brendan. What's up? What happened to my ticket?
Don't take it personally, man.
Am I not just dis...
No, there are only four tickets.
There are only four tickets.
Okay,
Brent.
So that's Dan.
Significant others. We're bringing
Brendan,
significant others.
And me.
And not Kalo.
Yes. Yeah, don't take it personally, man. Well, I'll be bringing you to a regular season Giants game,
that's
Kalo.
Much better.
And that's much better and more exciting.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
All right, well, before we go here, I think that we have to settle the three-hour-long question that's been lingering in the air is who owes who beer?
Right.
Kalo and Dan.
Well, Brendan, we'll leave it up to you.
Depending on Pedro Martinez's pitching skills, and I think you guys have to leave game win number 15, should it happen, for Pedro Martinez and the New York Mets, is a even Steven.
Yeah.
One each buy one pitcher of beer for that 15th win. But less than 15, Kalo, you're paying out.
That's
and,
right.
And over 15, then Dan, you're going to be the drinker of the night.
That's cool. Well, as I said to Kalo, we made this bet back in March.
Yeah.
We bet whether Pedro Martinez would get more or less than 15 wins this season. I said, look, you know, the bet was for two pitchers of beer over at Desmond's Tavern. And I said, look, the bottom line is that really we both win.
Right. And see, people, binding arbitration does work. The labor movement in this country is not dead. Don't let anybody tell you differently.
And I tell you, a month ago, I would have thought we would not be having this conversation because I thought he was going to win like 17 games. A month ago, he had 12 wins. And yesterday, he still had 12 wins. And up until yesterday, he has 13 wins now.
Yeah. He'll get, believe me, we got the whole month of September, he'll get up to number
15. You know what? I actually almost think he's not going to do it.
Jim's so confused.
Can I join
in on baseball?
The, can I join in on the sports talk?
Go ahead.
How about that Don Budge? Hey, that guy.
Yeah, Jesse Owens. Credit to his race,
great,
right?
Great
racist,
tennis player.
No account. Impressive. Oh, I'm sorry.
Bill Tilden, that guy?
Bill Tilden?
Bill Tilden.
What did he play?
He, other guys.
He was,
he was our first gay, he was a gay tennis player.
A gay tennis player?
You didn't know that. Back in the 30s and 40s.
You lie.
No, I'm not lying.
How did you find out about this?
I may be wrong, but I think I read
You did some research on gay tennis players?
That's right.
Really?
Stop dogging me, Riley.
I'm not. I'm just asking.
You're always dogging me. Wayne
who? Right. Oh, the other black guy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What about him?
You're dogging.
I'm not dogging. I love everyone.
I wonder if we're going to get any emails now that say that Riley needs to be more respectful to Jim Merle. Because we definitely get those emails when Mark Maron is here.
Yeah.
I wonder if Riley will get a pass.
Poor Jim Earl.
Jim Earl, people love you, man.
Yeah. Poor Jim Earl.
Well, that's because I like to play the race card, as you well know. That's right.
And you're not even black.
I'm not black. Please don't know. I'm not even black.
You're not.
I am.
Whiter than I am.
Don't call me a tool and a white man.
People don't know that.
Wayne Gilman's in the news booth clapping. Jim just got a standing ovation.
Hey, all you need to do, Gilman, is show him how to iron a shirt. That's all you need to do. And then now Gilman's got a white shirt on, too.
Oh, man. Know. This is going in bad direction.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Let's talk about the issues.
Yes, we're talking about the issues. And the issue is, it's time for us to go. Fellas, thanks a lot. It's been a great week, and you all have made it happen. Except for you. I don't like you. I love you, man. I'll see you guys the day after Labor Day. Keep listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.